Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics, one from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 387 for comics originally released on January 7th, 2015. Now, this is the start of a new year, and we're actually going to start changing things up a little bit on these episodes. Not drastically, we're still doing Marvel or DC, Marvel, and other. But Drew and I have had some discussions about how we do the rating and stuff, and we're not going to drastically change the 5-star rating system. What we're going to do is tweak it slightly to be almost more based on kind of a letter grade scale. Because particularly as I was going through the year in review episode, I was noticing really a lot of mine come down to like a 3 or a 4. I wanted a little bit more granularity. So we put a thread on the forum of should we switch to a letter grading system. By and large, I think, Drew, correct me if I'm wrong, all the feedback we got seemed to be pretty much, yeah, that's fine. Nobody had any objections. And they seemed to agree it would be a helpful thing.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think there was anybody that had any negative things to say about that option.
Basically, the crux of the problem was the way I was treating a 5. To me, that was an A+, best of the best, you know, it was the top of the scale. I didn't have anywhere for things that were of a letter A or A- grade if they weren't a 5 out of 5. So the basic way it's going to break down is we still have, you know, 3 or a C is an average. Not good, not bad, just average. Okay? From there, everything in my mind starts there, and then it goes up or down accordingly.
Right.
When it goes up to, say, a C+, you know, a 3.2 or something like that. Average issue, but in a good way, you know? From there, it can go higher to it's above average, but not by all that much. So like a 3.8 or something. And you get, and that's a B-, a B, which would be the equivalent of a 4. It's a clearly above average issue. Okay. From that, you've got a well above average, a B+, you know, 4.2 or something. You've got an A-, which is an exceptionally strong issue, a 4.5. A, which would be a nearly perfect issue, not flawless, but close to it. That'd be, in my mind, about a 4.8 or something, a 4.75 or so. And then an A+, 5 out of 5, best rating you can possibly get. And that's pretty much in line with how I was treating the 5 out of 5s. Hopefully this gets, you know, a little bit more granularity, I think, at the top of the rating system where I had been lacking it. Below that 3, you can get like a C-, a 2.8 or something. It's an average issue, but in a not-so-good way. Maybe it's a little cliche, maybe it's a little boring, maybe it's a little dry, whatever. From there, and I've got this whole scale up on the forum under the should we switch to a letter grade scale or not. And then when I start putting up, and it may take me a week or two to get this, the review synopsis, the final ratings we do, I've got pages that have all of the ratings from the Weekly Comic Spotlight on a couple of different pages there. I'll put this same chart at the top of that. But below that C-, you get into that D category. Now, I've got a D+ and a D-. Realistically, we're probably not going to use them that much. Because really, at this point, you're clearly below average. The thing has some problems. The concept of a D-, it's seriously below average. I mean, if it's that clearly below average, does it kind of matter? And to me, at this point, it's something I've lost interest in reading before I'm done reading it. Bad sign. And then really you get to that concept of an F. You fail. The issue is just a failure of an issue for the reviewer in that case. Not to say it's globally that way, but it wasn't ready for release. It needed more work. It was just really shy of the mark. It either seemed amateurish or had some unbelievably bad flaws. Something that people frankly ought to be a little embarrassed as of having released, or at least not proud of. And I've got kind of the concept of an epic fail, which, I mean, the F mapped back to the 1 rating, which didn't get used, I think, but once or twice out of what, we're on issue, episode 387 here. So yeah, once out of, you know, like 1,000 comics, rated or whatever. That epic fail is that 0. The one of, oh my god, I cannot believe this was released. Again, hope never to use that. Hope never to use the F, or frankly, even the D. Everything we're reviewing, by and large, should have a bit of a selection bias. We're picking stuff we want to read, right, Drew?
Yeah. Well, You are.
Stuff we want to read. I mean, there are going to be a couple of things. You suggest some stuff from time to time that's not on my reading list.
I twist your arm a couple of times. You twist my arm a couple of times. And sometimes we meet in the middle. And yeah. I mean, for the most part, I mean, it's stuff that I'm a willing participant.
There's usually nothing we're picking that we know it's like, wow, I'm just going to slam this because I think it's a total pile of manure with no redeeming possible, you know, value. I mean,
and we had headed things off at the past before that, you know, I knew in advance I wasn't going to like it. I've read a past issue or something and it's not my cup of tea. And so why are we doing this?
Exactly. You
know? Yeah,
exactly. There's no point going down that path. You know, we want to get stuff that hopefully helps our listeners find things they will like. Now, that's not to say, look at the stuff that gets the high reviews and that's what you should go read. No. As with any review show, you need to listen to enough episodes to calibrate what are your tastes compared to my tastes, compared to Drew's tastes. Judge accordingly. I may hate something because it's too horror or gory or a suspense thriller kind of a thing. That's just not my cup of tea. But if you love that kind of a stuff, the reasons I don't like it, you may like it. Simon Dark was a good example of this, where it was set in the DC Universe, but it wasn't really a DC Universe title. I didn't like it because it wasn't a DC Universe title. Other people would like it because it's not really a DC Universe title. So again, you know, calibrate, figure out where you are in agreement with us, where you are not, judge accordingly. The other feedback we got this week, and I think it's some really good ones, and I will try to be better in this, is giving the book's premise and creator information. Who's the writer and the artist? I will try to do personally much better at this. I'm going to start by basically looking at the solicits and going there. Hopefully that matches what we get in the issue. If not, I think that's worth noting. So, Drew, keep me honest on this. I'm going to butcher names left, right, and center. It is not intentional. I'm just really bad at this. The other thing on the premise, we're going to go with the series premise. And this is all work in progress. If you guys have feedback, do more of this, less of this. Use the forum, email us, let us know. The purpose of these reviews is to help you guys find comics you like. So, the premise is going to be not a synopsis of the issue, or even necessarily a premise of the particular story, but of the title itself. And this is going to be, frankly, a little challenging to do in some cases. Some titles are hard to sum up what the premise is. I think we've read a couple of first issues where, even at the end, I wasn't sure what the premise was. And there are going to be others of, well, it's a Batman title, damn it. What more do you need to know? Which may or may not be helpful. So, again, give us feedback as to what's working, what's not. The whole point of this is to, you know, tweak it over time. That having been said, we're still going with our DC Marvel Other format, so let's go into the DC title. This is Green Lantern 38. This is written by Robert Venditti, and artist is Admira Wiaja, and any creator that listens to this, or anyone who knows the creators and knows the pronunciation, if I get it wrong, send me a polite correction in email, maybe a pronunciation guide, something that even an idiot like me can get right.
That's a tough one, though. I mean, come on. Right off the gate, you get Admira Wiaja, maybe? Wiaja? It's a tough one. That's a tough one.
I think this is something that would have been easier in the 60s when most of the people were, you know, North Americans with names I would recognize.
Stan Lee and Jack Kirby.
Yeah, I could usually get that right. As the global market has really opened up with the internet to where we can have artists and writers from around the world, we're getting a much, I think, better cross-section of viewpoints, experiences, styles, and techniques and stuff. We're also getting a lot of names that I personally find really challenging to pronounce. So, that having been said, this issue, Green Lantern in the title. First off, the basic premise here is you've got Green Lanterns are kind of intergalactic space cops, if you will. The Guardians of the Galaxy, these powerful ancient beings, have gifted certain people, one or two per sector, with these power rings of great power that they can create energy constructs, fly, do all kinds of funky stuff. With the ability of, like, you know, uphold the good in this area. Green Lanterns are based on will. They're kind of cops. Then you've got Red Lanterns based on rage, the whole emotional spectrum. Goal here, not to explain all this. Look it up in Wikipedia. But basically, again, space cops. If you're familiar with the old Lensman sci-fi novels and stories, this is very similar to those. And if you're not familiar with that, there's a movie called Green Lantern that came out a couple of years ago that explains some of this okay. This issue Hal Jordan is basically sent back to Earth for some downtime. It's basically a breather issue between story arcs. And potentially, depending, you know, how long this lasts and what's going on, setting up for whatever's going to come after or leading up to the Convergence event and stuff. This issue, I thought, again, good breather issue between arcs. I liked Hal spending some time with Guy Gardner and Barry Allen. There's no super heroics this issue. None are really needed. There is a bar fight, so you can say there's some action, which kind of a writing crutch. I think if they hadn't done that, people would have complained it's all just talking heads, it's boring. The issue I had with this, first off, Drew, are you a regular reader on this title?
I am a sporadic reader and jumped off during the Godhead thing.
Okay. Are you reading Red Lanterns?
No.
How about Flash?
Yeah, I read
Flash. Okay. So you're familiar with Barry Allen, moderately familiar, I would imagine, with Guy Gardner?
Yeah.
Guy and Barry got a lot of time in this issue, and we found out, I think, a little bit more about what's going on with them than with Hal. And I thought, to me at least, the point of this issue was to for Hal and us to kind of reflect on what all's been happening to him lately. And I felt it wasn't until about the last couple of pages, the last scene or two, where we kind of got to what I at least felt seemed to be the meat and potatoes of the issue. And what we got was good. I enjoyed all of it. The bar fight, it's like, yeah, okay, it cliche, needed to have it to have action. It didn't need to be there for the story or the point of the story in my mind. Do you agree with that? Disagree with that? What were your thoughts on this?
I actually thought it was really good. And like I said, I'm popping back in from in the Godhead and off. And so this was a really nice standalone issue. I enjoyed the interaction between Guy and Hal and Barry popping in. I really liked the stuff with the ex-girlfriend. I thought that was great. Mm-hmm. And really some emotional resonance there in the towards the end. I like these sorts of issues, though, the smaller ones, smaller stories, standalone, just one and dones. I enjoy those, you know, out of habit. Those are clearly my wheelhouse more so than the 10 to 12 issue epics that just go on and on for forever. So there's a lot of stuff here that I like already, and I thought it was done in a really good way. And it was a good, some humor in here, and it worked on a lot of levels.
Now, I would agree with that. I used to like it back in the 80s when we'd get issues like this, where we got to see the heroes as people out of costume, just hanging out and interacting on a human level, not a superhuman level. It's been so long, though, since we've gotten this kind of an issue. It felt a little odd. Again, I liked what they were doing here, like they were trying to do here. It just seemed like it took a little too long to get where it needed to go. A lot of the beginning of the issue, particularly the bar fight and stuff, felt a little bit like filler or expanded. They haven't exercised these sorts of storytelling muscles at DC often enough for this to come off really smooth, if you know what I mean. And it wasn't clunky, it wasn't bad, but in today's, like you said, 10, 12 part story arcs and stuff like this, this sort of an issue, again, while I like it, feels offbeat, odd, and unusual in that respect. You get what I'm saying, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think the art's pretty good. There was a time during the interaction with the bartender, I thought that was a guy bartender for a while.
Mm.
Took me a couple of panels past to go, oh, okay, that's actually a lady, and I think she's just drawn rough and tough. Her name is Poncho, so. You could understand my confusion there. But yeah, there's a lot to like here. And this is encouraging for me, having dropped the book, you know, to be able to pop back in, kind of reaffirm what I like about the character, you know. And that helps a lot, you know, when it's time to decide whether I'm going to continue with this book or not. Because this did a lot to reaffirm what it is about Hal that you're rooting for. Why do we root for Hal Jordan as Green Lantern? It's because of some of his actions in here and some of the things he said, and it really resonated well. I thought it worked extremely well in that regard, and encouraged me to pick up the next issue.
No, it's good. Cool. In that respect, it's definitely a success. This, I think, was geared more towards longer-term readers, because I don't know that we've seen Ponchos. We've seen Hal on Earth at the flight stuff, you know, the pilot aspect of Hal, since maybe the beginning of the run prior to the New 52.
Okay.
It feels like it's been a while since we've seen him as Highball Jordan, you know, the pilot. I enjoyed this. I think it could have been a little tighter, a little more compelling in a few places. But again, like I said, I like getting to see the characters and knowing who they are as people minus their powers and stuff. So I gave this a B minus rating, kind of that 3.8 or whatever. I thought this was above average. It's the kind of issue I would like to see done more often, not all the time. It gives us a vantage point into the character beyond just the, you know, slaying the evildoer or, you know, the big cosmic menace or whatever. It humanizes the characters. And it was a good use of Hal and or not Hal, but Guy and Barry as well.
Yeah, yeah, their interactions were cool as well. I liked it a little bit better than you. I was at a B plus. This would have been the old high four for me. And so, yeah, I enjoyed it and gave it a big plus.
Cool. Okay, next up is our Marvel title. This is Ant-Man number one. This is written by Nick Spencer, art by Ramon Rezanas. And again, if I'm mispronouncing names, I apologize. Basic premise here, Ant-Man. This is the Scott Lang Ant-Man. Hank Pym was the first one. Ant-Man shrinks down to small size. It's kind of sort of like the Atom, but not quite that small. And this guy can also talk to ants and get them to do his bidding here and there. This issue, on the one hand, I kind of liked. On the other hand, grated on me just a little bit here and there. As a single issue, standalone, ignoring everything else in the Marvel Universe, this had a lot going for it. Nick Spencer's a talented writer. He had an interesting kind of down-on-his-luck hero approach to the title, which seemed to fit. But it also felt kind of out of continuity with Ant-Man's appearances over the last, you know, year or two. Or hell, even the last month or so. And I actually went back and reread Avengers World 16, which is the last time Scott Lang appeared, and I was all set to do this complete tirade on, wow, they just can't get continuity right, man, these editors just botched it, I can't believe this, that, and the other, and I'm on the fence as to that.
Then you realize no one read Avengers World, so how would they know?
There is that. What got me, though, is in Avengers World, first off, Scott Lang has died. Not in Avengers World, but in the past. He was one of the ones who died in Avengers Disassembled back in the day. How familiar are you with Ant-Man?
More of the Hank Pym Ant-Man.
Okay. Scott got his stuff by having ripped off Hank Pym. And actually, one of the things I really enjoyed about this, we get a lot of the backstory on Scott Lang in this issue. So if you don't know, you'll find out here. What they kind of gloss over is his daughter Cassie and her backstory. She was a member of the Young Avengers. She was Stature. She could grow big, shrink small, and she died too. Actually, at the hands of Dr. Doom, blasted away at one point. And in Avengers World, and this is a little spoilery, but it really impacted my reading of this, so I do want to talk about it a little. With the Axis inversion, Doom is now not evil. He gets some of the Scarlet Witch's powers, and it's a little unclear if he unkills Cassie. I'm just not sure if Doom's retcon was that she had never died, or if he actually brought her back to life somehow. And there's both, the end result of the two is the same, but the mechanics are fairly different. The captions imply he undid the death to where she had never died in the first place, which means the timeline and so forth would go a certain way of her just not having died. The art at the end of that issue has Scott, as she's showing up at his door, just kind of in shock of, well, she's back, what's going on? Which implied she died and she's now back, which is kind of what happened to him at one point. In this issue, the whole thing is, she's around, he's had problems with the ex-wife, all this kind of stuff. And it just felt, on my first reading, like they were just sweeping this all under the rug. And I'm like, that stuff happened, like, a couple of weeks ago. And to bring her in with, I didn't know you went to school here. First off, bad dad. He should know better. But I was thinking, wow, this is just editorial inconsistency. They should have known better. They should have told Spencer what the other writer had done, and so forth, yada yada. Of course, in the process of reading Avengers World number 16, I realized Nick Spencer was one of the co-writers on it. So he knew. It just seemed like that. What I was thinking was a weakness here, an editorial inconsistency, I think was just potentially poor storytelling in the other issue, which had negative ramifications on my reading of this. because I went into this with certain baggage and just, wow, they can't even get his family life right and stuff like that. And there are some things here, his whole apartment life, etc., flies completely in the face of him dating, what's her name? The she thing from Future Foundation. Dara Deering, maybe? Which, again, was reasserted just a month ago. So there's a certain aspect of continuity here that isn't working for me, and I'm not sure who's at fault or whatever. But there does come a point where, I mean, I'm not suggesting everything that's ever been published be treated as just gospel. It happened, come hell or high water, and you must conform to the craziness of the 60s or something. No, that's ludicrous. But when the last appearance, just a couple of weeks ago, and this seemed to fly in the face of each other, that bugs me. Because continuity, if you think about it, is it happens based on storytelling. If continuity doesn't matter, then the stories don't matter. If the stories don't matter, why should I be spending, let's see, in this case, $4.99 for this issue to go read it? You know, the whole thing almost starts to unravel for me at that point. And it's a shame because I think if that hadn't happened, I really would have enjoyed this issue a lot more. It's strong. It gives us backstory. It's a good first issue. It covers a lot of ground. It's got a really good page count. It fits in nicely with the Superior Iron Man stuff they're doing. Has some great cameos by a bunch of characters. And it really shows, I think, Spencer as a really good writer. It's just how it fit in the bigger tapestry of stuff. Just, it didn't work for me. So, what were your thoughts on this?
I had totally forgotten that Scott Lang was in FF. I read almost every issue of that run before they canceled it. And so that tells you that he was not an impressive character in that run, or I have a horrible memory, or both are true. That's also possible. But I thought his character here was good. I really, you know, being a big fan of Nick Spencer's from Superior Foes, you know, that same sensibility is here and that same humor is here.
Mm-hmm.
It works almost as well as Superior Foes, but not quite. You know, it was nice to see some cameo by Beetle in here that he'd pull over from the Superior Foes run. And he just comes off as a little dumber than I remember him being in whatever, you know, and in the one-liners, he does a lot of jokes. He jokes around a lot, almost too much, but it's right on the edge. It's right on the edge where maybe it's just a little too ha ha ha. And maybe it doesn't need to be, you know, people don't really talk like that all the time. You know, they have some, not everything's a one-liner and a comeback. And there's maybe a little bit too much of that in this first issue for me. I really liked the whole heist and the caper with Stark Industries. I thought that was great.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoyed some of the stuff with the wife and the daughter. And then it kind of takes the whole move to Miami really came out of nowhere for me. And I thought, well, we were having a good time up there, and now we're going to, none of that really matters. We're going to just kind of start over again in the next issue. So that was kind of threw me for a loop, that choice at the end. But I thought there was a lot here to like, and I liked the humor. I liked the character a lot. I'm concerned with where it's going to go and what kind of, I don't, you know, you're not going to have the same dynamic set in Miami that you had throughout this book.
No, you can't.
It's going to be totally different. And I still have a bad taste in my mouth from those Daredevil issues that took place in Miami. It was like a Daredevil miniseries that happened a year or two ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they spent, I think, three issues in Miami. And yeah, they were horrible. Just didn't work. And I don't know if it's Miami, but it just, that's what's coloring my perception of where this could go. Florida just doesn't seem like the right setting for this character. And
well, it's interesting because you're right that it goes a certain tone, style, direction in New York and stuff, has a really good aspect going. They hit a point where they could have ended it one way, but then we get the last couple of pages where it takes a sharp turn to Miami. And I'm like you said, it seemed like a very big change in direction, and it makes a lot of what happened here almost not matter. What's going to happen next issue could be anyone's guess. And that, I thought, was a very interesting swerve at the last minute, and a very risky one.
Yeah, and I mean, because I thought that the dynamic between Tony Stark and him worked really well. And I thought this is going to be cool, him working for him going forward. That'll be an interesting thing to explore. There'll be a lot of stuff there to mine that. And that'll be really great. And I think that's kind of gone now, it feels like. The way this issue ends. And so that was kind of troubling, but still, I think it's a really good debut. And I don't want to, these are kind of nitpicks for me, but a little more than nitpicks. I mean, it kept it out of the A range for sure. Mm-hmm. Because of these things, but I still think it's a really strong book, something that I'm adding to my list of things to read from Marvel. And I gave it a B.
I can see that. For me, this one's really hard to come down and give a letter grade to, because the backstory, the stuff at the beginning, the heist, I loved a lot of that stuff. I thought it was really well done. The cameos were awesome. The art's really good. Then there's the, okay, they went and did what at the end? I mean, the swerve at the end is a little jarring. The way Cassie is treated flies in the face of just how mature she had been and that character growth for her in Young Avengers and stuff like that. It's just, I almost want to give this two ratings. One for the part I liked, I thought was really good, and the part that I didn't like, you know, if I could just tease those apart into two separate issues almost, but I can't. So I almost have to give this a middle of the road rating. I'm going to go with what I have in my notes here, although on the one hand I'm feeling it's a little harsh, on the other hand I'm feeling it's totally justified. I went with a C-, and I hate to do that because I think this is a better issue than that. It really comes down to, in the general bigger picture of the Marvel stuff, the Marvel Universe, the continuity and stuff is really where it has its problems. If I go, and I probably should, with just this issue in and of itself, I think it's stronger than that. I think I'm going to go with a C+. I almost want to go with a B-, but I can't quite. I think there were enough... missteps isn't quite the right term, but decisions I just don't get, you know, with the way they went on some of this stuff. You know, again, the decision, let's uproot him and first let's completely ignore his past continuity, completely, you know, have Cassie's background up for grabs, change the status quo at the end of this issue. There were aspects of this issue that were just all over the map, and I don't know why. Because I don't think it was unintentional. I think this was the game plan. It just didn't work for me. Is really what it comes down to. As much as I want to like parts of it, and as much as I did like parts of it, there were other parts of this that just really set me off. And that's as much the baggage I bring with me. You know, having read the past stuff, if they had some footnotes or at least a line here or there of, yeah, Dara, Deering, and Scott, they broke up. Okay, whatever. You know, or something. But just to pretend that never happened is almost, you know, writing off the entire Future Foundation stuff entirely. And I find that disrespectful to readers. So I'm going to go with the C+, which is actually a better rating than I had originally given it in my notes.
I talked you up.
Good backstory, a lot of content. I do think it was overpriced.
Yeah.
$4.99 for this, sorry. Outrageous.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
So that's annoying. Shall we move on to our other book?
Yeah.
This is Ninth Generation, or IX Generation, from Image Comics. Matt Hawkins is the writer. Stepan Sedgwick is the artist. This is one that you had suggested we do. Not something that I had pre-ordered through DCBS. And it's been a while since I've read anything kind of set in the Top Cow universe. I read a few Top Cow books, but their whole Cyberforce, Witchblade, Darkness, that universe, I was really into for a little bit. They rebooted it, and that kind of bounced me out of it. But I figured, okay, yeah, sure, let's give this a shot. The concept sounded interesting. It seemed to be a little self-contained-ish, so sure, why not? I figured, let's give it a shot. How much Top Cow Universe stuff have you read, and what did you think of this issue?
I'm trying to think. I know I've sampled a few of them. Nothing that I stick with. Let's see. Is Wildfire, is that Top Cow?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think it was Image Central.
Think Tank?
That's Top Cow, but not Top Cow Universe.
Okay.
So Cyberforce, Witchblade, Darkness, Magdalena.
Yeah, I've sampled most of those. They've never stuck.
Okay.
And that's kind of how I feel about this, because I didn't care for this really at all. You know, there was some interesting stuff with when they found the witch blades and you know, the whole world I didn't really care for. You know, tons of exposition and backstory to get through, to slog through, really, before we finally get going and fight a little monster down there and find a cool weapons cache. That was all right. The art is really kind of cool. I mean, that's a positive. But as far as the story and these characters, I didn't like them. And, there's a bit of a twist at the end that you would, under normal circumstance, would make me interested in checking out that next issue, but I don't think so. It just did. Well, there was enough around about this that I did not like that I don't want to stick around.
Okay. Basic premise here, because I forgot to do that before. This is kind of sort of a sci-fi setting. We've got people that are genetically re-engineered, can clone themselves, rebirth themselves or whatever. They've split the world up into various factions. There are 9 of these leaders or whatever they call them. I forget the terminology.
They're like gods.
Yeah, essentially gods. They're the 9th generation or whatever. This is set in the year 2802. And we've got, you know, Aphrodite, Apollo, Ares, Artemis, Athena, Hades, Hephaestus, Hermes, and Poseidon. And again, there's a lot of exposition at the beginning to kind of set up this world and how it got from sort of the present day Top Cow universe into this future version. And there's an aspect of this that kind of sort of reminds me of Legion of Superheroes. Of it's set nearly a millennium in the future, so, you know, it's sort of self-contained, yet it's got some of the cool toys to play with. There was mention of Velocity, one of the Cyberforce characters. It's like, okay, the direction they went with her was kind of interesting. Not what I had expected. It was very, okay, that's how they're going. You know, what I liked about this, first off, the Stepan Sedgwick art. He's a solid artist. He's an incredibly prolific artist. And his stuff just works for me. So I enjoyed that aspect of it. And once they got to the point on the moon base with the arsenal.
Yeah.
We've got the Witchblade. Basically, the 13 artifacts of power, that was kind of what got me into the Top Cow universe, that time frame with Firstborn, with artifacts, all that kind of stuff. It was when they rebooted that it sort of threw me out. It's like, you know, I'm getting up to speed on the continuity, and then you kind of ditch it. This isn't continuity heavy, but you've got, these are almost Easter eggs. You know, when we get the Witchblade here, it's like, oh, cool, I recognize that. That's a familiar touch point. I've read the Ron Mars run of Witchblade. It's, you know, from issues 80 to 150 or something like that. It's fun stuff. Didn't like the direction they went in after it, so I left. But I'm familiar with enough of these toys, yet not so emotionally vested in them that they can't go in different directions with who uses them or how they use them or whatever. The whole objects of power thing is always something that I find interesting. I mean, in terms of superhero origins, I am not going to, you know, be, you know, have trained myself from birth to be, you know, the Batman kind of a character. I'm unlikely to have my parents rocket me from, you know, a dying planet to one with a lower gravity thing where I'll be able to fly and do Superman type stuff or whatever. But I still hold out hope for, you know, some Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, types, or Guardians of the Universe, I should say, type beings to gift me with a power ring. Because, I mean, anyone could get one of those. Jeez, you know, you just get the right Cracker Jack prize and boom, you're a hero. And that's kind of what you get here. I thought the establishing shot of the room could have been better, but I was able to kind of place where most of these things were in the room. And yes, I had to look up on Wikipedia what the 13 objects were. I enjoyed this, though. The characters were fun. The art clicked with me. It, as a self-contained title that's got all the toys from the Top Cow universe to play with and not really much of the baggage, I think. I liked this. It was a lot of fun. You know, it had the familiar, yet it was new and different, and I felt it was accessible. So for me, this worked on a number of levels for me. If you're looking for a way to kind of dip your toe in part of the Top Cow universe, I think this fits the bill. This is something I think I'm gonna add to my pull list, and I'm gonna put a little bit of a disclaimer on that. Of I think what I'm gonna do is check the solicits for the other couple issues first, just to get a better sense of what direction they're going and how long this may last. But it seems like it'll be self-contained enough. I don't need to worry about it crossing over with all the other books they do, which in some cases have been kind of late, and kind of that was the other thing that pushed me out. I really enjoyed this. For me, it was. I can't say everything I expected it to be, because I didn't expect a damn thing out of this, which is why I didn't order it. It proved me wrong. It was something I should have ordered, and I really enjoyed. So I'm going to give it an A rating. I think it's almost got that A-plus type capability, but not quite, because I'm not, oh, geez, I've definitely got to put this on my pull list. But I really enjoyed it, and I thought it was very solid.
Part of the premise here is the being bored with immortality that we saw explored in that Boom book a few episodes ago.
Eternals, yes.
Eternal, yeah. And it was explored much better in there than it was here. I had to get about halfway through this before it kind of got interesting, and just slightly so. I didn't like much of anything in this, really. And, that did like the art, but that's not enough to save it or keep me on it. Unfortunately, I put this at a D+.
Wow. Interesting. Okay.
And I'm jumping off.
Well, different things for different people. I mean, for me, the ties to the Top Cow universe were plus. The way they had set up kind of the different factions, 9 factions on the world stuff worked for me. That seemed to be the stuff that you had a hard time getting through. I think it's a matter of again, what are your expectations? What baggage do you bring in? And certain things that work for one people are going to be the exact things that don't work for somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, I totally get that. So I'm curious where they go with this. I've got concerns about Top Cow in terms of some of their books just seem to take forever to come out. And maybe that's, again, me not paying attention as to their timeliness, because I got off their books for a while. And they did have a period around the Artifacts when it went from a 13-issue miniseries to an ongoing, where the entire universe went off the rails for me. Ron Mars got off, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This may be enough to pull me back in. It may not. We'll find out. So sorry you didn't like it, though. That's.
I'm glad you did.
Well, you should pick better next time. What else did you read this time around that was worth talking about?
A book from Dark Horse called Lady Killer. It's a 5-issue miniseries written by Joelle Jones and art by Jamie S. Rich. And it is the first issue. Basically, we just meet the main character. She seems to be a hitman, on the down low, and still trying to be the 50s era housewife during the day. And it's set in that era and very much of that time, but also with this hitman twist to it. And it was really cool. Really cool debut. Something I recommend folks check out. It's only a 5-issue mini, and they actually label it as a mini series, which Dark Horse is good at doing. Yeah. I appreciate that. And they still give me a chance to weigh in on whether something, that I want to check out or not. And they don't try to trick you into thinking it's an ongoing when it's really not.
I am getting to the point where if they say a X of whatever, or it's got a known ending point like Batman Eternal or something like that, it's a miniseries. Otherwise, I'm considering it an ongoing. And if it's something like Arkham Manor, which only goes for 6 or 7 issues and then ends, or something like Starlight that I wasn't sure, and maybe it was just my ignorance on that one. But something where I don't know how long it's going to be and it just ends after 6, maybe I'll just see it as a failed ongoing. If they can't be upfront with expectations at the launch, I think that's just a hideous mistake.
I don't think they get the benefit of the doubt to say, well, we planned it that way the whole time. It was always going to be a miniseries. No, if it would have sold 100,000 copies each, it'd still be calling. So you're right. It's a failed ongoing. At that point,
it's a known situation for the publisher, because if they say it's ongoing and it doesn't ongo, that looks bad for them.
Yeah.
If they say it's a miniseries and people wait for the trade, it fails. That's bad on them. You know, I feel for them, but it's hard for me to keep track of what titles are coming out, what's not, and what's over, what's not, because they're not upfront about it.
Yeah.
You know, something like Immortal Iron Fist, or whichever the current Iron Fist title is, goes away for a couple of months. There's nothing solicited. It's like, well, is it over or not? Iron Fist Living Weapon is what it is. And then suddenly it's back. Is it? Are you publishing it or not? Just make up your mind. I get cranky about that.
Issue 4 of War Stories came out from Avatar Press. This is written by Garth Ennis with art by Tomas Ira. And I was pretty lukewarm on the first story arc, the first three issues. And this issue really, it jumps into a different war. It's more like 70s Middle East war that I'm not familiar with this actual war that happened. But it's really cool. Very, it's tank centric, warfare, and, an Israeli tank commander is involved, and it's really, really solid. Picked up a lot compared to those first three issues, and it's Avatar. The art's really good. It's not bloody or gory so far.
Really?
It is a war book, but
that surprises me from both a war book and, more importantly, an Avatar book.
And a Garth Ennis book.
And yeah, and that too.
It's incredibly tame so far. And it's been a really solid read. I've really enjoyed it. Something, you got to check that out if you're into that sort of thing. Book called Epochalypse, number one, EPOCH.
Mm-hmm. I recall seeing that. What one's that? What is that one about?
That's from Legendary Comics.
Okay.
And it's written by Jonathan Hennessy with art by Shane Davis. And from what I can tell from the first issue, all time is all mixed up, and different eras and folks are pulled out of their time, their home time, to this kind of central time location
mm-hmm.
that is policed by RoboCop looking guys. You know, they are kind of keeping the law and order, and the law and order for them is keeping it rooted in this specific time period, and they root out any anachronisms that they find. So part of this issue was them, coming down on this diner that was secretly using a microwave. It's because it's like a 50s era diner, so heaven forbid anybody use anything that's anachronistic, and out come these cops. But that was just kind of our introduction to this world. They didn't spell everything out, just kind of showing, not telling us everything. But it was interesting enough for me, and a cool premise, that I want to stick around and check it out. So it's the first book I've ever read by Legendary, I think. I don't remember ever reading anything else by them. And I thought they did a really, really solid job on it. And interesting. We'll see how it plays out. You never know with these second issues how they pick up.
I was going to say, it's easy to have a great first issue. It's tough.
Yeah.
It's hard, actually. I think it's easier to have a really good first issue than a really strong follow-up second issue.
Yeah.
Because if the stronger the first issue is, the more intriguing it is. That sets a high bar for the next issue.
Yeah.
Let me know how that goes. The concept sounds interesting, but I've also got enough things kind of, you know, on my plate that I want to hear how it goes further before I decide to dive into it.
And another really solid issue of The Humans. The third issue is out. This is from Image, written by Keenan Marshall Keller with art by Tom Neely. And this is, you know, monkeys ruling this 70s United States. And just the art is just off the charts great. Super mature themes in here, but really something to behold. And, you know, you got to check this out when that trade comes out, if you like, you know, pushing the envelope type of comics. It's really a cool experience so far. Three issues in, anyway. It's been great.
Cool.
We got another issue of The Fade Out. Loving that book by Brubaker, of course. Issue 4 came out. I think I like that a lot more than you.
Yeah, I didn't continue with it after the first.
Men of Wrath, number 4 from Jason Aaron. It's very similar to his Southern Bastards book,
mm-hmm.
which is weird that he has two books that are similarly on about the same issue and kind of telling the same story. I think that's really strange.
That is odd.
Yeah. And the second issue of Wolf Moon, the Vertigo book, Colin Bunn's writing about werewolf hunting. A little better. get a little more backstory on who these people are and things about this lycanthropy that we didn't really know from the first issue. So,
so
that was pretty cool.
The question I've got is, how is it that I've read like 45 issues this week? We've already talked about three of them, but I haven't read any of the ones you've already talked about in this you know, section here. You know what I mean? You're reading a lot more on the image and the back half stuff than I am these days.
Well, I was trying to think about that because, you know, you are about a third.
Roughly, yeah.
And I was looking at my numbers that I, you know, basically, you know, my post-it note. and I think it's like around 20% Marvel, 20% DC, 40% Image, and then the remaining, what would that be? 10%, 20%, whatever's left is other.
You did liberal arts, not math, right?
yeah. So yeah, maybe it's 30%, more 35% Image or so. But I don't read the back half as often as I'd like. But every once in a while, I try to find new things. They usually don't rise up enough to continue with them, you know.
Out of what I got this week, if I take out Dark Horse, DC, Image, and Marvel, because there was no IDW I got this week, the only back half of the catalog I got this time was Captain Victory and the Galaxy Rangers, Doc Savage, Doctor Who, Eternal Warrior, and two issues of Magnus Robot Fighter. Somehow, I haven't gotten the ninth issue till now.
Yeah.
At 9 and 10. There's not a whole lot. And really, Valiant, Titan, and Dynamite, not small publishers. Getting stuff out of the back half, I mean, there's a ton of great stuff there, but it's hard to find. It's transitory. It changes. You know, you get something, you like it for a while, and then it's over and gone. Not all of them, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Go ahead.
Unbeatable Squirrel Girl? Did you? Since you're all in, I'm assuming you read that?
Yep. What did you think of that one?
Well,
that sums up my thoughts pretty well.
I
liked aspects of it. There were other aspects where I thought they are really going after kind of a more indie vibe or reader.
Yeah, this is Ryan North did the writing, art by Erica Henderson, very cartoony art style. This is my first experience with Squirrel Girl, so I don't have a long history with her, and it's a very young book, I think, skewed very young for me.
Young, all ages-ish. Art style was, again, not what I would expect for mainstream Marvel or whatever. And nothing wrong with that. I think they're, again, trying to branch out to a larger or at least different audience. But it was one of those where I picked it up more because I'm all in. I like the character. If I needed to cut back, this is one I could cut back probably, though.
I picked up another all ages, the Avengers No More Bullying issue, number one.
Yeah.
And I thought that was pretty good. I appreciate what they're doing. It's cool to do things like that. I remember fondly like the anti-drug comics of my youth, you know, where Spider-Man or, you know, anti-smoking or something, you know, they'd have those special issues of Teen Titans or.
Yeah, I remember those.
You know, and so I like that they still do that. And this was the first story, especially, was really cool. With, you know, Hawkeye was getting picked on, and he just had enough. He just had enough, and he told him about, you know, stop picking on me all the time. And I thought that was great.
Yeah, it was something that, I mean, was very much kind of public service announcement-ish.
Yeah.
But that's what it was meant to be. You know, and there's
if you know that going in, you can appreciate it for what it is.
Yeah, if you think it's just a regular issue of Avengers, you're going to be like, huh?
Yeah.
But there's a very strong anti-bullying, both in-person, cyberbullying, all that kind of stuff, going around the last year or so. And on the one hand, it's good that the anti-bullying message is out there. On the other hand, it's bad that it seems to need to be out there. But, I mean, there's bullying and that kind of stuff in various ways all over the place.
So yeah, I mean, even when we were younger, but it wasn't to a point where people were killing themselves because they were getting bullied. At least I don't remember it that way.
I think that's one aspect of bullying. I think there are others that are more subtle and not as blatantly destructive, but very hard on people. Mm. You know, there's a a large contingent of our society, of any society, not just ours, but people think about stuff from their own perspective and never bother to see how that comes across to other people.
Yeah.
I think I work at a fairly good company. I don't think there's intentional maliciousness, but you know, we're recording this on a Thursday. I'm going to go into the office tomorrow. It's a Friday. We're going to have donuts. I'm gluten-free and not by choice. Is that bullying? Oh, but there just come a point where the complete apathy to my food allergies and stuff like that almost takes a similar-ish tone of we just don't give a crap about you kind of a thing. Again, going back to like that Hawkeye story.
Yeah.
You just shoot arrows. Who cares about that kind of a deal? You know, so there's an aspect of, I think, the message with things like the bullying stuff that is surprisingly applicable to a much wider contingent of our population than I think any of us really truly realize. Everybody feels outcast for one reason or another. I mean, hell, if you were to roll this back 10 years even, well, you read comics? That's for kids, you know, kind of. Again, that's not necessarily blatant bullying, but it kind of is.
My wife still does that.
Yeah. Shame on her. Now we've taken over the movie theaters. We've won.
Yeah.
So now we can bully them. No, I'm kidding. That's wrong. But yeah, I thought that was an interesting issue. I applaud Marvel for putting that out there. It takes a certain degree of skill to do a no bullying message with superheroes who are very much the personification of might for right, which is kind of bullying the bad guys because you're beating them up every time. But, you know, hey, it happens. What else did you read that was good?
I thought Justice League 3000 issue 13 was pretty good. I kind of liked that the some of the Etrigan stuff at the end, that the demon guy.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see that one coming. It was cool to see the just the one with Booster and Blue Devil.
Beetle and Booster.
Blue Beetle and Booster.
Yeah.
Boy, put Blue Devil in here, man. I would be all over that. It'd be great.
I'm amazed he wasn't that part of that Justice League. He was a Justice Leaguer after that.
Yeah, it seems like it was right in that era almost. So
it was about 10 years later. He was more in the international group, or not the international. It was, I'm trying to remember when that was. That was back when they had not the satellite, not the moon base, not the, maybe it was the Watchtower. Anyways, he was a member for a little bit, I think.
Anyway, these members of the Justice League are very unique. Very unique takes on them. You know, they're flawed clones, and they're interesting. I kind of like some of their mannerisms and some of their flaws and their foibles, and it's kind of cool.
It's almost kind of sort of a parody version of the Justice League, but not quite.
Yeah.
And I liked how they've gone a little further afield with Beetle and Booster by having them be the real ones, cryonically frozen for, you know, a millennium. I'm questioning if this is going to turn out to be from a different world than the main New 52 world.
We don't anticipate this book making it out of Convergence, do we?
Yes and no. I don't think we're going to see this book. I think we're going to see a book replacing this with these characters, maybe. With this Bwahaha Justice League kind of a sensibility, maybe. I think there's high possibility of that. Justice League 3000 as it is? I don't.
Yeah, I don't see it. I don't see it coming out.
But there are a lot of books I don't see coming out of Convergence. Some have been canceled already. Some have not.
Down to 32. There's plenty more that could not make it out the other end. That's true.
Yeah, I just don't know what direction DC's going to go coming out of Convergence. And I think that's going to be pivotal for them. Do they try to recapture glory days and bring back old stuff? Do they stick to the new 52 by and large with a few things here and there? Are they just retooling? Is this something like Hypertime that's thrown out there of every story matters and then they just forget about it 6 months later? I don't know. And if they botch the delivery of this, it's either going to feel like all the stories don't matter, the new 52 doesn't matter, or they don't know what they're doing, or they're backpedaling on the new 52. There are a lot of ways this could go poorly for them, and I hope it doesn't.
Could it be all new number ones? Could it be relaunching the whole line again? It could, couldn't it?
It could, and I think that would be a mistake. If they've got the remaining titles that are still around and relaunch those, unless it is a blatant new starting point, either it's a blatant new starting point, at which point, what the hell, I just spent 3 years on the new 52. for what reason, or it's not, at which point it's a why a new number one. I can see, I mean, they've already got like 20 slots they could do new number ones with. I don't think they need to relaunch Justice League, Batman, you know, all the other ongoings. I think that would be a colossal mistake. But flip side, Marvel relaunches a new title a week, it seems like, or relaunches a new volume of an existing title or property every week.
Yeah.
So it can and is being done over there.
When the online solicits come out, they are going to be the first month of Convergence titles, right?
Online solicits, as we record this, have already come out for Dark Horse. Teasers for DC have come out. They may come out either Friday or the Monday this gets released. And yes, the DC ones are the first week of, or the first month of the Convergence stuff. So the first half of that.
Okay.
So hopefully people will find some good clips to send in based on that, because there'll be a great chance to spotlight properties you really don't get a chance to see all that often anymore, or, well, haven't seen for the last couple of years. Maybe after Convergence you will, who knows. So yeah, check out the online solicits again, the preview spotlight. Those clips will be due the 7th of February.
So yeah, you know, I found it interesting that one of the guys from the forum that sends in clips, Brawlinator,
mm-hmm.
he seems like he's a lapsed DC reader, that Convergence is actually resonating with him enough that he might not be all in again, or he might not be all in on DC, but it's interesting enough to him that where he was all out, he is now going to come back in and start checking out what DC has to offer. So in that regard, it's, you know, it's a success with at least one lapsed reader. And
well, and that was the initial success of the New 52. A lot of lapsed readers came back yeah. to check it out. I love listening to his clips, the passion he's got for the stuff. He's always compelling as to, oh, I should check that out, you know. I really enjoy listening to his clips. So yeah, it did seem like he's been a little dissatisfied with the New 52 stuff. And I'm still all in, but frankly, I can understand people having that opinion.
Oh, yeah. You have to be able to understand that, because this, the quality for line-wide isn't there.
Even if the quality were, the continuity isn't, and there's a certain throwing the baby out with the bathwater they did.
Yeah.
And what, like I was saying earlier with the Ant-Man stuff, continuity is stories. If you throw out the continuity, you're throwing out the stories. If the stories don't matter, why should we read them? That's the fundamental thing that I think some of these people at some of these publishers have lost sight of.
And I don't understand why they can't give me an asterisk in a little editorial bubble, you know, and explain it away. Retcon it if you have to, but at least admit that you know that it's a thing, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
You know, just don't pretend like it doesn't exist.
In the process of the Ant-Man stuff, I was doing a little digging, and I had to pull up Wikipedia and a couple of things to realize this, but remember how I was complaining about how in Avengers World they had U.S. Agent back, and it's like, that can't be John Walker. He wasn't in that shape.
Yeah.
Apparently about 2 years ago at the end of Dark Avengers, which I did read, there was at least a line of dialogue of, hey, we can fix you. I don't recall if they ever showed him back, you know, full, you know, with all of his limbs attached or whatever, but there was at least something that they could have addressed that with. And, you know, in that issue of Avengers World 15, they didn't even acknowledge who the character was. Is it John Walker or not?
Yeah.
I'm not saying you've got to answer every continuity or trivia question out of the gate in every issue, but if there's not the payoff for long-term readers and making people feel like investing in these stories, in these worlds, is worthwhile, people aren't going to invest in them. And that's investing time, money, energy, cognitive brain power to remember this, you know, whatever. And if they're not going to do that, you lost your audience. So I take continuity seriously. It's the whole point of reading this stuff. It's the fun of the game to a degree.
Yeah, otherwise you wouldn't be all in.
Well, it's not even just being all in. I wouldn't be a long-term reader. It's
right.
Hard to be a long-term reader. There's no point being a long-term reader if every issue or every episode of a TV series, they change the rules of the game. You know, it's the whole Dallas, you know, it was all a dream stuff from the 80s or whatever it was when JR got shot. Uh-huh. An entire season just didn't matter. That didn't go over well, nor should it.
Yeah.
So, anyways, yes, the Convergence stuff should be in the round of the solicitations. That should be up by the time the episode goes up. Plenty of stuff for people to pick. I've got to start figuring out what I'm going to do for my picks. Of course, I'm still waiting for the December numbers to come out. So I can do the number crunching on that and the year-end stuff. So I've still got a couple of things on my plate to wrap up 2014.
Still no December numbers?
No, they've released the year-end stuff. I've done a little number crunching on that, but I haven't done my article yet because typically what I do is a wrap-up of how the months went and all that kind of stuff, and I can't do that without December.
Wow.
And I can't estimate how many things flew below the radar without that. So hopefully that'll come out, Friday, Monday-ish, whenever. If not, I've been busy this week on some other stuff at work, so I haven't shaked the tree to find out what's going on there. I'm sure it's a busy time at the end of the year with Diamond and stuff like that. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That'll do it for me.
Cool.
Join us next time as we discuss Fables, The Wolf Among Us number 1 from DC Vertigo, Star Wars number 1 from Marvel, and Conan Red Sonja number 1 from Dark Horse.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.